Good morning and evening, amateurs and shortwave listeners. This week we have news on Southern Electronic Group's car boot sale coming up next weekend, a couple of contest announcements, our regular articles from Ono, Bob and Steve, and of course more great bargains from Roy's Helpline. This is News West, VK6ARN. We are a community organisation and we've been serving up the news since 1931. I'm Steve, VK6SJ, your presenter this week. Now on with the news.
Well, there's only 3 weeks to go. 3 weeks to go until what? Some might say. Please pay attention. The John Moyle Memorial Field Day is one of the Aussie amateur radio contests that are of a more relaxed pace, more friendly. In fact, if you decide to operate into the wee small hours, you're likely to have a small chat with someone that you just worked, or at least exchange greetings because you worked them a few times already. But apart from all that, by now you should have decided where and how you'll take part in the John Moyle contest. Although this contest is aimed at portable operation, it's perfectly okay to work from a home base if that option is the best for you. If you're still undecided, think about this. Although it's a 24-hour contest, you do not have to work the whole 24 hours. You can work some of it, such as a block of so many hours, or you can work it in bits, a couple of hours here, a few hours there, and so on. Although working portable is the primary aim of the contest, it's an option, not compulsory. You may work the contest from home or a club shack. And there are different categories within the contest to cater for that. You don't need a super station to work this contest. You'll need to be able to work the HF bands and 50 MHz, 2 metres and 70 centimetres, and a few others higher up the band for the people who are keen on those. Now, the VK contest logger is out of date for this contest. You'll need to use the N1MM, that's November 1 Mike Mike logger. Visit the WIA website contesting section for more information on setting up N1MM. That's better done sooner rather than on the day. Anyone can string up a dipole in a few minutes, but if your computer isn't ready to go, you're stuck until it is. Good luck in your last few weeks of preparation for the John Moyle, and I'm Bob VK6POP.
Hi, this is Alan, VK4 Sierra November, the WIA's representative on the Radio Society of Great Britain's Commonwealth Contest Committee. The Commonwealth Contest is one of the longest-running contests in the HF contesting world. It promotes contacts between stations in the Commonwealth countries and territories. This 24-hour CW contest is held on the 14th and 15th of March and starts on Saturday at 1000 UTC. High, low and QRP power sections are available for single and multi-operator stations. HQ stations will be active for bonus points. Australia has submitted a team of 5 members along with 6 HQ stations as VK1WIA through VK6WIA. If anyone would like to activate other call areas, please let me know. So dust off your key, shine up the contacts and have some CW fun. Good luck and best 73s. This is Alan, VK4, Sierra November, on behalf of the RSGB.
Good morning from the Southern Electronics Group. SEG would like to announce an event planned for March 2026. The SEG Mount Barker car boot sale is planned for Saturday, the 7th of March 2026. The event will be located at Frost Park, the Mount Barker racecourse, which is just off McDonald Avenue in Mount Barker. Doors will open at 11 a.m. and there will be a $5 cover charge for buyers and sellers. Bring along your treasures or come and grab a bargain. For all those southern country folk who miss the Hamfest sales in Perth, here's your opportunity to clear out the shack. We'll provide further updates as we get closer to the event. This is Darren, VK6EK, for the Southern Electronics Group.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. The other day, a fellow amateur revealed that they qualified for membership of the QWCA, the Quarter Century Wireless Association, twice over. There may have been some innocent whistling involved. During the ensuing discussion, it emerged that it all started with a crystal radio set built together with Dad, which triggered a whole lot of memories and made me consider just how you'd get into the hobby of amateur radio today. I think it's important to notice that amateur radio is a hobby. There are public service and emergency communication aspects to the experience, but it's essentially a hobby. It's supposed to be fun, I'm mentioning this because that might get obfuscated when I tell you that in order to actually be a radio amateur, you need a license. This license is required because when you transmit, radio waves don't know about international borders, don't know about interference, don't know about priorities and other aspects of our deeply interconnected world. Think of it as a way to formalize your responsibilities. Note that I said, when you transmit. You don't need an amateur radio license to listen, which you can do right now, using all manner of online tools in your web browser. WebSDR, KiwiSDR, and Shortwave Listener are useful search terms if you're inclined. Getting an amateur license is not difficult. There are many amateurs who were licensed as a teenager, or even younger. It sets you up for life, and amateur radio license in hand, you can start transmitting on dedicated amateur frequencies, or so-called bands. A license is required in every country, and how that specifically happens in your country will require that you do a little research. Most countries have a so-called peak body, an association that represents amateur radio to their government. It's a good place to start. In Australia, where I live, it's called the Wireless Institute of Australia, or WIA. In the United States, it's the ARRL. The UK, it's called the RSGB. Searching for amateur radio peak body and your country should get you there. If you're stumped, your national telecommunications regulator is often another good place to find information. Ultimately, you'll be obtaining your amateur license from them anyway, even if they don't actually run courses and exams, though some do. Essentially, what you're looking for is where you need to go to get an amateur license and what's involved. As far as I know, most of this infrastructure is run by volunteers, fellow radio amateurs, even if there's a fee involved. You should also know that amateur licenses generally come in different flavours or levels. For example, in Australia, there's currently three levels of license: Foundation, Standard, and Advanced. The USA has Technician, General, and Extra. The UK has Foundation, Intermediate, and Full. The Netherlands has Novice and Full. In other words, what it's called and how many levels there are is country-dependent, as are their requirements. I'll also mention that whatever license level you pursue, it's your hobby. You get to decide if, how, and when you look for more responsibilities with a higher level of license. It might surprise you to know that I hold the basic foundation license in Australia. I've held it since 2010. So far, I've yet to have a need to pursue anything further, despite regular encouragement to upgrade to a real license. You do you. It's your hobby. Some countries allow all of this to happen online. Others require that you use pen and ink in person in a dedicated classroom and everything in between. If you are hard of hearing, blind, or unable to physically attend, there are often specific tools and processes available to help you. Make sure you ask. As an aside, I will mention that, as in life, there are people in this community who are less than welcoming and will go out of their way to be obnoxious, obstructionist, or worse. Fortunately, while vocal and destructive, they are in the minority. Don't let their behaviour dissuade you from participating. You'll find amateurs all over the planet who will welcome you into the community with open arms. There are thousands of local amateur clubs, online resources, and of course potentially a couple of million radio amateurs at the other end of your antenna. It's important to understand that the journey into amateur radio is different for everyone. For many long-term amateurs, the experience came from a family member or neighbour. While that route still exists, it's much less common as an introduction as it used to be. I first came across it as a teenager during a sea scouting event called JOTA, or Jamboree on the Air. Whilst memorable, it wasn't until two more amateur radio interactions, decades apart, that I finally got to the point of actually discovering the hobby. For your journey, Just being here, today, right now, is already a start. Welcome. It's nice to have you here. You've found the community. What are you waiting for? I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima Alpha Bravo.
HAB College is a Perth-based organisation focused on providing top-quality training to enable students to attain their foundation, standard and advanced licences. We run a foundation course in the first weekends of February, April, June, August, October and December of each year, with the exams being run the weekend after. We also run a standard advanced course on Tuesday nights this year, starting on Tuesday, March the 10th, and finishing in October. While there are quicker ways to get the qualification, we believe our approach provides the best depth of knowledge of any course in the country and providing the most useful start to your amateur career. To book a place on any of our courses, please use the Contact Us page on our website at www.hamcollege.org.au. We are constantly looking for additional instructors to assist in delivering our courses, and in particular, looking for one more instructor to join our standard and advanced course team. This would suit an electronics professional or anyone with a good depth of knowledge of electronics in general. We've had a number of foundation licensed hams also assisting in delivering the foundation course, so please don't let your license level prevent you from assisting. More experienced hams are also sought after for teaching all levels of training. Our training and support crew are well respected and a friendly crew of hams. We learn from each other and our students. We're also keen to add to our training courses to provide training in other aspects of the hobby, but would need additional instructors for this. So if you have a topic you'd like to teach, please contact us via our Contact Us page. And again, to book a place on any of our courses, you can contact us via our Contact Us page at www.hamcollege.org.au. Thank you.
You are listening to News West, your weekly news from VK6 ARN. If you have any items for the news, the latest they can be submitted is noon Friday. If you have an item you would like read out by the news team, please give plenty of notice to allow someone to record the item before the Friday deadline. This is Darren, VK6EK, for Amateur Radio News, VK6 ARN.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with this week's episode of Did You Know? So this week I thought I'd talk about simulcast radio networks. These aren't common in Australia, and to my knowledge, there are none in the ham sector in Australia. I'm hoping this article might pique some interest, and maybe some of us might want to try to build one. My first experience with a simulcast network was actually when I was working in Orange County, which is just south of Los Angeles. Bunch of techs who were also hams that were decommissioning a public safety simulcast network there to make place for a new digital radio network, repurposed the network for 2 metres. So what is a simulcast system? A simulcast repeater network consists of multiple FM or digital mode repeaters with overlapping coverage, all on the same frequency. All repeaters need to be locked to a single frequency standard, these days generally using a GPS-driven master oscillator. In this way, if you are equidistant from multiple repeaters, because the transmitters are all locked into a common GPS-based master oscillator, each radio transmitter is in phase and the signals add together to form an even more robust signal at the mobile receiver. If one receiver starts to lose sync though, or one transmitter starts to lose sync though, the whole network starts to degrade pretty quickly as signals arrive at the receiver out of sync and start to negatively affect each other. There are some other principles we need to understand in order to understand how a simulcast network operates. These are well-known basic principles in RF propagation. When two signals on the same frequency are being received more than 12 dBm apart in terms of received signal strength, the strongest signal captures the receiver, and only that signal will be detected by the radio, regardless of any phase difference between the two signals. If the two signals are less than 12 dBm apart in received signal strength, they begin to interact. I'm sure we have all seen this phenomenon when two signals double up on a 2 metre repeater, for instance. Even when two signals are close together in signal strength, though, if the two signals are identical in all respects, including phase, containing identical speech from the same source, they add or become stronger than interfere with each other. The other principles are that if two similar signal strengths which are being transmitted in phase can still interfere if the two transmissions are more than 13 kilometres apart in distance from the receiver. This is because the difference differential is resulting in a signal being received arriving at a slightly different phase. When designing a simulcast system, one needs to take into account a bunch of different aspects. The coverage is important. In a simulcast system, a commanding site with coverage all over the city, like our Rollystone repeater for instance, is not necessarily a good thing. With RIP, you can easily receive it at a similar strength to a much closer repeater, hence receiving the two signals out of phase and having interference. You could delay the phase of the originating signal at one of the repeater sites, but that would just cause issues in another location with a different repeater. Ideally, you want much smaller coverage areas with many more sites. In fact, if no site could be heard more than 13 kilometres away, then there'd be no potential for interference. Of course, this is in reality a difficult thing to achieve, unless you live on a giant bowling ball, as many things affect coverage, including buildings, terrain, mast height, antenna gain, etc. In the real world, though, if you can limit coverage to around 13 kilometres and have plenty of sites, for instance, a ham in every suburb hosted a site on a modest mast, then any sites you're in range with are going to be no more than 13 kilometres apart in distance, and the whole system would work well. You can do this with less sites, but you need to carry out a lot more detailed coverage and interference analysis and accept that there will be zones of interference. With careful planning and playing around with a combination of power output and fixed phase delays, you can move areas of interference to regions where you may not necessarily want coverage, for instance off the coast. Well, what's the point of all this? RAP has great coverage all over Perth, so why not just keep it simple and live with one site? This is the case as long as you don't live in the black hole of Midland where coverage isn't so good. I'm sure there are other places that are shielded from RAP as well, as a greater site as it is. A simulcast system has the advantage of being able to create a much wider coverage network, all on a single frequency, so even a ham rig that doesn't have a voting capability that many commercial rigs have, we'll be more on that on next week, can enjoy integrated coverage provided by multiple sites without having to touch the VFO or memory channel button. That's fine, but 2 metre repeater diplexes are expensive and hard to source. True, and I would suggest that 2 metres is not the best choice, but 70 centimetres would lend itself well to this application. The standard repeater split of 5 megahertz means we can use smaller, cheap and cheerful mobile notch-style diplexes that even brand new aren't that expensive. Antennas are smaller, so easier to install. A 2 metre pole on a roof of a house isn't so hard to install or get permission to install. The challenge then becomes how to connect these sites together, and a common design that anyone can assemble that is accurate enough to form the simulcast function. To me, this would be a great community project that could be coordinated by all clubs in the metro area, i.e. NCRG, HAG, PARG, VHF Group, WA Repeater Group, Ham College, etc. I think I could point to a few people in each of those organisations that have significant experience in building commercial multi-site systems on UHF, who could easily each coordinate a bunch of sites for the network. Okay, so we know how our simulcast network works in transmit. Haven't touched yet on how the sites will be interconnected, nor have we looked at the base receiver side of the equation yet. Stay tuned next week, same bat channel, for part 2 of this topic. Thanks for listening again. This is Steve, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know?
This is VK6ARN, and you're listening to News West.
Hi, I'm Bob, VK6POP. I've just completed a beginner-level course with the CW Academy. I'm quite amazed at how much this 78-year-old brain can learn in 8 weeks. I'm almost ready to get on air. In fact, I probably am ready, but need to give myself the proverbial push to get on with it. Time will tell how I get on. If you're a CW practitioner and you hear VK6POP or something vaguely resembling it, please be kind to me. I do recommend the CW Academy course, so if you want a challenge, keep an eye or an ear out for more courses as they arise. There are many excellent providers of amateur radio training around the country, and although most adults can study for the foundation level exam on their own and pass an exam, there's more to be gained by attending face-to-face courses, because at these courses you learn far more than the bare minimum required to pass the course. By this I don't mean that they fill your head with more information than you need, thereby clouding what you need to know for the exam. By attending group lessons for amateur radio qualifications, you're at the same time building up networks within the amateur radio community and learning about how to go about getting into the hobby. For those considering the foundation level course, the Radio Amateur Society of Australia, RASA for short, publishes a foundation level study guide, an electronic publication which takes you through the syllabus with clear explanations, diagrams, photos, and hot links to purpose-made videos that demonstrate the topic at hand. The RASA Foundation Level Study Guide, which follows the syllabus prescribed by the Australian Communications and Media Authority, was developed and compiled by a team of a dozen or so experienced amateurs across Australia and is regularly updated. Complementing the Foundation Level Study Guide is the Welcome to Amateur Radio Guidebook, also published by RASA, which gives amateur radio newcomers a host of information that they will need to get going in the hobby. This booklet has been downloaded more than 5,000 times since it was first published. Both the Foundation Level Study Guide and the Welcome to Amateur Radio Guidebook are free and may be downloaded from the RASA website, which is vkradioamateurs.org. I'll say that again, vkradioamateurs.org. I'm Bob, VK6POP.
The Northern Corridor Radio Group gathers for a chat, cooked breakfast and work on current projects every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. Visitors and prospective new members are always welcome. The club is on Nangara Road at Whiteman Park on the first right turn after the Tonkin Highway entrance when travelling east towards Allenbrook. The club has an excellent station with multiple operating rooms, an EME station, a remote station for all members to use, club repeaters on 2 metres, 70 sems and 23 centimetres, and a bunch of other activities for members of all interests.
This is Peter, VK3YE, and you're listening to News West.
Good morning, this is Roy, VK6X-Ray Victor, with this week's helpline for the 1st of March. Straight into March, we have no items to report for you this week. Unfortunately, it's a clean slate, so if you'd like to get in early for next week, got plenty of room, scope there, so please give me a call. Please email me, vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com, with any of your helpline or disposal items. And until next week, and hopefully something to report, vk6xrayvictor is saying 7-3.
Thanks, Roy. Well, that brings this week's broadcast to an end. Thank you to presenters, contributors, broadcasters, and especially all you listeners. We're always looking for material for the broadcast, so please feel free to send in your club news or any article of interest in either voice or text. Now please stand by for the callbacks, or if your broadcast doesn't have a callback, put out a call yourself and create your own callback and send us the details. 73s, this is Steve, VK6SJ, at VK6ARN, News West.